Hey there, Off the Grid listener. Let's take a moment to dream a little dream together. What if you didn't need to be perfect? You didn't need to start over. You didn't need to be small and quiet so you never caused harm. And you didn't need to do it alone or just try harder. What if instead you could get support at a nervous system level to weather whatever happens in your business? And you could learn trauma-informed best practices for your work that end cycles of freezing, fawning, or people-pleasing. What if you could be held in deep care as you practice honoring your boundaries and amending and accounting for inevitable harm? If any of these dreams are resonating, I want to invite you to join Foundations, a hybrid training container to strengthen your trauma-informed care and business practices, taught by podcast sponsor and somatic trauma-informed practitioner, Jess Jackson. Foundations gathers May 17th through 19th with live trainings and a virtual portal with an actionable curriculum. Learn more and save your spot at the link in the show notes. Welcome to Off the Grid, a podcast for small business owners who want to leave social media without losing all their clients.
Let's go off the grid.
Okay.
Let's go. Off the grid.
Okay.
I know that you really want to put your phone away.
Yeah.
Let's go off the grid.
Hello and welcome to Off the Grid, a podcast about running a thriving creative business with no or minimal social media presence. I'm your host, Amelia Hruby. I am the founder of Softer Sounds Podcast Studio, the co-founder of the Lifestyle Business League. And on this show, I am your fellow traveler and guide on our path of doing business with radical generosity and energetic sovereignty. Before we dive into today's amazing conversation, I do want to remind you that this show is paired with a super supportive free resource. It's called the Leaving Social Media Toolkit, and it includes three things: a five-step plan for leaving any social platform, a list of 100 ways to share your work off social media, and a creative marketing ideas database. You can get it for free at offthegrid.fun/toolkit, or just head to the show notes to grab it today. Now that you've got the goods, I want to introduce you to today's guest. Paula Crossfield is a Vedic astrologer and business strategist dedicated to helping spirit-led entrepreneurs make more money and impact so they can bankroll the change they want to see in the world without burning out. I love this last parenthetical in her bio because we do not want to burn out. So Paula is here today because she invited me to be a speaker at the upcoming Cosmic Business Salon, and I invited her to be on this podcast. So as we're diving in, I just want to make sure that all of you lovely listeners know that you can head to cosmicbusinesssalon.com right now to get a free ticket to the salon. And once you do that, settle in to enjoy this conversation all about cosmic business. So welcome, Paula. I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I'm a huge fan of your podcast. I did a big binge listen of like the first like 20 or 30 episodes because I was just like, this is so magnetic. So I'm really grateful to be here.
Well, thank you. I feel like the podcast actually relates to what we're talking about today, because Off the Grid is really where so much of my personal and spiritual and business purpose comes to life, which to me is a lot of what makes up cosmic business. So I wanted to start there with kind of this big picture question to you, like, what is a cosmic business? What does that mean to you?
Yeah. So it's something that I've thought a lot about. You know, there's a lot of people who have different aspects of the cosmic business that they really put forward. But what I'm trying to offer is a complete new paradigm, a totally new way of thinking about business so that we don't have to kind of work within this late capitalistic structure breakdown that we're seeing in the way things are done. It's not healthy. It doesn't support us. So what a cosmic business is to me is, first of all, leading with our values. It's really understanding that values are important when we're making buying decisions, and they're important for the people who are buying from us. So we have to talk about those values, right? And we have to put them forward, and we have to live those values, right? Secondly, it's about doing work that's in line with our purpose. There are many different cultures who talk about purpose. There's Ikigai in Japan. There's Dharma in India. There's many ways of thinking about this, but we all crave that. It's like what we're here to do. And so understanding that, you know, the tool that I use is Vedic astrology. We can talk more about that, but that kind of helps us understand more what we're here to do. But there's also our intuition. There's other things that can teach us that. But our business should be built around that, I believe. The third piece is that health is centered in a cosmic business. And what does that look like? Our health, the health of the planet, the health of our clients, that we're really honoring them as beings. We're showing up to serve. We're thinking about our offers as really helping them to transform and step into the next level of themselves. And we're not harming in the midst of all of that, ourselves or them, right? The fourth piece is connection and collaboration, that there is no such thing as competition, that we're all actually here to help lift each other up. And connection and relationships have always been the center of business. This is why I was really drawn to your work, because, you know, people always come to me and they say, do I have to do social media? In the past, I thought, well, it's kind of a necessary evil that, you know, you can set it up where you don't have to do as much, or you can create a pulse that feels okay for you, or you can find other ways like podcasting or YouTube or whatever else. But connection is what underlies all of it. Like, how are you forming relationships? That's really the question. And then how are you nurturing those relationships? And then for me, like the icing on the cake is that we are so wildly successful that we are able to give back and actually make change in this world. We don't have to wait for billionaires. We don't have to wait for governments, because that's really not going anywhere, right? And so my vision is that thousands of conscious entrepreneurs are actually giving back and making a change that they want to see in the world. So I call that bankrolling the change.
One of my favorite things about your work is that cosmic business isn't just some, you know, like vague concept or like a marketing message for you. As you said, it is a framework. It is a new paradigm for businesses, and that those of us business owners in the group can really take part in. And just to recap for listeners, I love all the pieces of it you mentioned: values, purpose, health of ourselves, our community, and the planet, connection and collaboration, and giving back or generosity or redistribution. There are so many ways we can bring in that piece for me that's all about the reciprocal flow and redistribution of resources that, as you grow your business, can become a really powerful part of what you're doing. And I really enjoy the way that this paradigm can reshape businesses, even my own. Like, learning about your work, it's been an invitation to think about these different aspects and how I can embed and embody them in my business. So I'm curious, maybe if you could share a bit about your business journey and like, how have you, I want to say like, come to be a cosmic business owner? I'm not sure about the languaging around it, but like, I think that your story does show a lot of this, sort of the way these pieces of the paradigm fell into place. So could you take us on that path with
you? Yeah, absolutely. So where do I even begin? So I'm in my 40s. So let's go back to my 20s when I was really determined to write a book, and I was pushing, trying to make it happen. And, you know, I think of myself as a pretty good writer, but I was editing and writing at the same time. So those of you out there who know,
yes,
you know what I'm talking about. If you're trying to write a book, it's very devastating work when you're doing that. I also didn't have the perspective I needed to have. At the end of my 20s, my life fell apart. I was living in New York City. I was doing yoga, but it was really, yoga was basically keeping me sane, and I didn't realize it, but it was keeping me sane. I went through a divorce and I lost like everything, like my community in New York. I had to move. I had, you know, so many, I got rid of like most of my belongings. I lost my cat, like all these different things, right? Move across the country. And I had basically like a spiritual awakening in the rift of that, like in the end of that. It was like, I got to see who I really was. I had my first experience with Vedic astrology and literally was like, it blew my mind. I literally was like, what is this? I will follow this to the end of the earth. This is my path, right? Mm-hmm. But it was an unfolding, right? I had to kind of ground within that. I had to really listen to my intuition. And I did some traveling in India. I spent a lot of time like up in the Himalaya, like meditating. It sounds really romantic, but I was in like a little cottage there and spent a lot of time with myself. I hadn't done that. And I really got to like look at some of the demons and the things that were holding me back. And I realized that at the end of that, like the scariest thing I could actually do would be to go back into the world and acknowledge that I have these really strong desires to have a farm and also to be financially sound, like to really show my parents that I am like committed to my own success in life and I'm going to be, you know, I'm not going to rely on anyone else to have financial success. That was the scariest thing I could possibly do, is take what I've learned in the spiritual path and not just like go off and join an ashram, which is what I thought I was going to do, and instead like go into the world and integrate this work into the world. So all of this comes from me thinking of business as a spiritual practice. And like the cosmic business idea really emerged from me just trusting the unfolding of my intuition and trusting this path that was like forged around what is my purpose, which is both understanding the cosmic blueprint and looking at the astrology and really being able to work with this system. But also I grew up with entrepreneurial parents and I have always been an entrepreneur. And so my dad was telling me about business deals when I was like 8 years old and I loved it. So I have always had that mind. And so bringing those two things together and understanding that that was really what I was here to do.
Something I'll talk about on this show is sort of finding the places where our like creative artist journey meets our business journey. And I think that the intersection is like where our work is of service. So I love that in your story, you're on this like deeply personal spiritual journey. You had to find what was true for you after this, you know, for my tarot reference, like kind of tower moment of everything falling down. And then you're able to bring it to a business community to merge the integrate these different parts of yourself and offer so many different things that are of service to people who want to create businesses that are embedded in their purpose. I feel like often when we tell stories like this, when you share your story, when I've shared my story, we talk about like taking the leap and we talk about the fear and then like the radical alignment we find on the other side. But it can often be really hard to even like hear that call. It can be really hard to know like what is our intuition telling us. I see the question a lot, like, is it intuition? Is it anxiety? How do I know? Could you talk a little bit about how you cultivate your intuition and connect with it in your business and maybe like offer some advice for how other people can do the same in their life or in their work?
Absolutely. I will say too, like I suffered from debilitating anxiety, like as a teen and in my 20s, I really, really had like so many voices in my head that were keeping me from really shining and being who I was here to be. So I'm very deeply familiar with the anxious voice. And it's not like it's completely dead. It comes up in certain times, but I'm able to recognize it. And what I like to refer to it as is like a jagged voice. It's not this, the for me, the intuitive is like a, is sort of like a soft, straight line. It's very grounding. And when I hear it, I may be triggered because it's like asking me to do something. I'm like, are you serious? Yeah. Usually it's something where you have to trust because you really don't understand why you're being told that. And I always use the example of this farm. We used to live in Oregon. Now we live in Maine. And we got a clear knowing that we weren't going to find what we were looking for in Oregon. And we both were just like, Maine, right? And we put a circle on Zillow around the coast of Maine, inland, about 40 minutes. This house had just come up. It was the exact same price as the one we just bid on Lost in Oregon. It had 160 acres. It had twice as many bedrooms. And it was exactly what we had pictured in our mind. It's white with a red door and it has a wraparound porch. And we were just like, well, we have to go see it. So like this gets back to my process, which is you got to make space. You have to make space because there's so much that wants to take up space. And in creating the space, you can start to observe. And for me, observing is like those signs that I just said, the red door, the fact that it was the same price, the fact that we both said, where would we live if we didn't live here? And we both said Maine, even though my partner had never been to Maine, right? Like these kinds of things, it was noticing those things, but there had to be the space. So I create the space by having a morning practice. Even if it's 20 minutes, it's like I'm connecting with myself and something greater. I'm sort of tuning myself in. And that sets the tone where I have, you know, I have space where I'm like, okay, what's happening? And I'm making my transition into my day. And so then I try to create space in my day. And it may not look like me sitting down to meditate or doing chanting or anything like that, but it's like moments where I go outside, I'm walking my dog or whatever, and I'm just reflecting. I don't have noise going on all the time. I have like a moment, right? So that space, that noticing. And then the third thing is taking an aligned action to show your intuition that you're listening and to build your trust muscle around it. So, you know, sometimes it may be a little challenging. And so you can ask for a sign to show you that this is actually truly what you believe is, you know, like, am I really seeing this? Or you can just do a Google search or do something that's showing the universe. That's how I refer to it, as like, hey, I'm paying attention, I'm listening. And I feel like the more you do that, the bigger the intuitive hits get. And so for me as an entrepreneur, I use this all the time in my business. I'll get a hit like, okay, this program, even though it's working for people, it needs to be retired or it needs to be rolled into something else. And so I'm curious, does that happen for you too? Are you listening to your intuition when you're making decisions about your business?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I've never thought of it as a process before. I've never tried to like reflect exactly on what I'm doing. So I love this process of make space, practice observing, take aligned action. The way I think of it tends to be saying yes to myself. I think that personally and culturally, I was really trained to deny myself things constantly, whether that be through, you know, the lens of patriarchy, through the lens of diet culture, through the lens of capitalism, just through so many of these overculture paradigms. I was really like trained into self-restriction and denial. And so for me, tapping into my intuition started by getting quiet enough, making that space to actually hear what I even wanted, to be able to surface my desires. And I always have a funny example of this, which is that a few summers ago, I noticed myself just like craving like a Coke icy, like a frozen Coke. And for days and days and days, I just said no to myself. I was like, why would I want this? Like, I know that Coca-Cola is like an evil corporation. I know that it's bad for me. And I also had this voice that was like, well, if I just let myself have it, I might just have like 10 of them. That's like the diet culture stuff, really sneaking up, not trusting myself. So after like days and days of saying no, I just finally went and got one and it was great. And I had the one and it was like wonderful. And that was the whole experience. And I just learning to say yes to myself then taught me I could trust myself. And that is then the practice I've carried into my business to respond more directly to your question. Like I will often have impulses that feel counter to my strategy, counter to popular narratives. You know, for instance, there are things that I've had many business advisors or coaches tell me I should do in my business that are just no's for me. Like I've definitely gotten people that say I should be working on corporate podcasts, that all of the money is in these institutions. And that's just like a hard no. Is that true? Probably. I don't book $10,000 or $20,000 podcast projects with my clientele, but I don't care because that's just like not something I'm interested in doing. And that's me trusting my intuition over other people's noise.
Yeah. And I also was thinking, wow, when you went to go get the Coke, like what happened? You know, because like for me also, sometimes with intuition, you get a hit to do something, like to call someone you haven't talked to in a long time. And if you just do it, sometimes interesting things unfold that you weren't expecting. And like that for me is what I'm usually thinking when something feels really non sequitur. It's like, okay, this must be an intuitive hit because this is really weird. I don't know what this is about. And I actually love to laugh at situations like that and just be like, okay, this is happening. I don't know why the universe is asking me to do this, but I'm going to try it.
Absolutely. And I cannot point to like any one specific thing that happened from the Coke Icy, but I did find pleasure in it. And some, I think that was the purpose. The purpose was just to like allow myself that pleasure during a time when I was being pretty demanding of myself and other areas of my life. And that was just some medicine I needed. And I didn't know the Coke Icy was that medicine, but it was.
I think also for people who are listening, it's important to know how your intuition shows up because it could be like, you get goosebumps on your arm, or you feel something in your stomach, or you have a twitch that happens in your eye. Like there could be like a physical manifestation or like a smell that you smell. I've heard all kinds of things from people. So just noticed that as well? Like, for me, it's like an inner knowing, but other people have different ways of feeling their intuition. And just getting to know that will also help you really discern whether it's anxiety or intuition.
Yeah, I think for me, I can really feel like this energy surge that really comes from like my root. That to me taps back into like what I know about human design and being a generator with sacral authority. But what's funny is also I can produce that energy surge by just having too much caffeine. And so I have to pay attention. Like, am I really feeling an intuitive hit or am I just over caffeinated today? Because I've committed to some things or said yes to some things that I thought were like deep, true yeses for me that actually were just like, oh, I pumped my body full of this artificial energy and that's what said yes to this. And I think that goes back to where you started with this like making space and observing. And I know this now. So I know, okay, I had an extra coffee this morning and that's what's replying to this email for me instead of like actually me replying to like, do I have time for that call next week? But I think what's coming up for me as we unpack this is you're like, it is about knowing how those intuitive messages come through for your body, observing not only like what's arriving in the world, but also your own like inner patterns and how things work for you. And then really attuning your life to yourself in decisions big and small, whether that be getting a Coke Icy, which is apparently now a major theme of this conversation, or moving from one coast to another. Like if you're practiced in listening to and trusting your intuition, you can make decisions with it, like across that huge spectrum of, you know, the decisions we make in a day or in a lifetime.
Yeah. And what you focus on expands, right? Like when we focus on our intuition, we start to really get to know it deeply and we can trust ourselves even more and more, right? And there's so much we can say that we need to trust as entrepreneurs. We need to trust in our vision. We need to be able to trust in our support. We need to be able to trust in our offerings, right? And all of that kind of comes out of our own creative energy. And so focusing on that will give us the trust and it will strengthen that relationship of trust.
Yeah, I love this refocusing on trust again here. And I think that that's something that for me as a business owner, it comes up in my self-trust, right? All of these practices we're talking about to cultivate our connection with our intuition and cultivate self-trust, hopefully as a response. And also it comes up in me trusting my clients, trusting my customers, trusting my listeners, the lovely people tuned into this podcast. Like, this is the energetic sovereignty piece of Off the Grid, where like if I am really standing in my self-trust and as a result, like reflecting that out and asking people to stand in theirs, I am trusting that they're making the decisions that are right for them. And this comes up a lot, I just think, in all of our work. And, you know, it comes up in the collaboration part of Cosmic Business. Like, how does self-trust and then trusting others kind of work for you in your work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's natural for us to all have self-doubt. Like if we're to flip it on its head, you know, people talk about imposter syndrome. Like we're really in a culture that it primes us to have self-doubt because it's not good, quote unquote, for the late capitalistic system if we are all individual powerhouses leading our own businesses. Like, you know what I mean? Like they want many of us to just like buckle down and do the work. And so it's something we have to deprogram ourselves from. And if you weren't feeling imposter syndrome, I'd be like, okay, what's that about? Like, it's totally normal to feel, right? And so cultivating self-trust is looking at this examples, the real examples of how things are working and celebrating those examples and reminding yourself of your credibility, reminding yourself that you're a vessel, you're bringing something through you, you're a conduit, you're co-creating something. You are in a dance, right? It's not just you doing A, B, and C. And if you truly believe that, then you can trust this thing that's much greater than you that is guiding you in some way. You know, like we call that guru or spirit or, you know, the universe. Like I've been more of an Indian lineage. So we use those kinds of language, that languaging. But like, if you can trust that, that you're a conduit, and you can remind yourself like what you've already achieved, like that's where I really draw on to help me. And then of course, using my intuition to guide me. Like, okay, this is feeling really true right now. Let's observe it. Let's see what happens. And let's take a next aligned action and see what happens next.
Yeah. What this is bringing up for me, it's actually taking me back to social media and to the word influencer, because I think that one of the problematic and harmful cycles we see on social media is that social media users, and I've done this, so I'm not judging other people. I've totally done this. We like project ourselves onto influencers and then we outsource our agency and our trust to them. And so it produces this cycle of imposter syndrome and of self-doubt, where because we are always looking outside of ourselves for answers, we start with the tiny questions, right? Of like, what's a good thing to put in my smoothies for breakfast? And we end up on this path of outsourcing major questions like, what should I do with my life after grad school or something? And I think that that cycle is just really, it has been mastered by these social media platforms and by the rise of the influencer. And this isn't, again, to critique social media users or influencers specifically, but just to comment on why that first step you gave us, making space, is so important. And I think making space from social media, away from social media, is so important because it is a place where we are inundated with external voices that seed self-doubt through the aspirational imaging that is pumped into those platforms. And if it's already really hard in our society to cultivate self-trust, but to do it while you're immersed in social media, I mean, that just felt impossible to me.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I'm living the question of like, what should my relationship to social media be? And, you know, listening to your podcast has been hugely influential to me as well. I've learned a lot. And so I'm like, okay, you know, I try to teach people how to use social media in a way that's going to be helpful for them to convert leads and is going to be healthful for them and their body, their mind, right? And so I'm a big proponent of guardrails. I'm a big proponent of like taking breaks. And also I notice that I justify like getting caught in a scroll, like, oh, I'm doing research or something like that. So like really getting real with yourself about what's happening, and even like muting several people or starring the people who you actually want to be in your feed, or unfollowing people that are distracting you from your goals, because you can waste lifetimes on this app not doing the creative work that you're here to do, not bringing forward your vision. You know, so how do we do that? I'm living that question right now. I definitely want to take more breaks. I'm really intrigued by this process of like optimizing Instagram so that people can get to know you there. They can come and like sniff around and get to know what you do and get a sense of your vision, and they know what to do next. And so you don't always have to be holding their hand with new content. Like, I'm really curious about that process, and using social media as a way to get people on my list and get new listeners to my podcast, because that's where my heart is. That's where I'm giving like the most heartfelt content. And so, yeah, I'm really curious how this is going to unfold.
No, I appreciate you sharing all of that. And I think a couple of things that I heard in what you were sharing, like definitely the distracting nature of social media, the way it pulls our attention in so many directions. And I think as a result, just like pulls it farther and farther away from ourselves. You know, even the concept of like going down a rabbit hole on social media, like we just get pulled deep into these things that perhaps by the end, we can't even remember why we cared about it to begin with, or how we got there. That feels like a very common experience. And I think the other thing you're pointing to that I've been thinking a lot about lately is the sort of more like the content cycle, and how can we show up and create these opportunities for people to get to know us and to feel drawn in and like magnetically attracted to our work without getting ourselves locked into so many places where we're constantly creating or performing over and over and over again for attention. Like, and I have noticed, putting on my podcast studio owner hat for a moment, that I'm seeing more people who are interested in creating private podcasts or limited series as a way to like help people get to know them in a sort of like bite-sized one-time opportunity. And they're less interested in creating, you know, a podcast where they're publishing every week into perpetuity, because I think we're all so exhausted by content marketing, which when we really unpack it is the marketing strategy that like was not built for like the solopreneur, right? That's not how it started. And I'm not sure it works super well for us unless we're really using like an influencer model. So just hearing all of those threads, I'm excited to like see where you take your work next.
Absolutely. I've been doing a weekly podcast for at least 2 years now. And originally it was biweekly, every other week. And I will say that I'm only doing that as long as I still have these creative ideas. I don't want to do it when it becomes like, oh God, now I have an episode to record. Like for me, it's only going to work as long as I'm excited about it. And so that's what I teach my clients, like inside of my programs. I want them to be aligned with what it is they're doing in their marketing strategy so they feel excited to do it and not be doing it just because they feel like they should do it. And a lot of people come to me and they're like, I don't want to do Instagram. It's like, don't do Instagram then. You don't have to. You can do YouTube. You can do a podcast. You can do any other thing. You can do LinkedIn. Like maybe your ideal clients are on LinkedIn, you know? It's kind of interesting how we all have this sense that we have to be on Instagram and we really don't.
Absolutely. As you know, that's my whole shtick. You don't have to be on Instagram if you don't want to, or any social media if you don't want to.
Are you feeling fed up, burned out, or totally sick of social media? Are you wondering if your business might be able to be successful without it, or if your creative work would still find its way out in the world without you posting it on Instagram or TikTok every 10 minutes? If you can relate to any of these musings of mine, I want to invite you to join me in The Interweb. The Interweb is an annual membership for creatives, artists, small business owners, freelancers, influencers, entrepreneurs, and creators who want support sharing their work and making money without social media. When you join, you get access to on-demand courses taught by biz friends across the internet and quarterly live events with me, Amelia. If you love this podcast, I hope that you'll head to the show notes to learn more and sign up so that I really can see you off the grid and on the interweb. Now let's get back into today's episode.
I want to take us in a related but different direction and talk about money. So I started season 3 of the show with an episode about overcoming under-earning and kind of sharing my money journey and how starting a business helped me completely shift my relationship to money and really helped me empower myself in relationship to money and like believe for the first time that I could earn and steward money. I think similar perhaps to some of the things you were sharing earlier about, you know, wanting to prove to your parents that like you could do this. I definitely had all of that in my story. And I know that within your work as both a Vedic astrologer and a business strategist, you talk and teach a lot about money karma, which is something I'm not super familiar with. And also, I think a concept and practice that a lot of off-the-grid listeners would find supportive, because when I shared my money story, what everyone wanted was like energetic and spiritual and emotional resources to shift their relationship with money. Like, I feel like a lot of people I heard from were kind of like, yeah, like I have an app, I look at the money, I do the numbers stuff, but like there's so much more underneath that that we have to do as well. So with all of that sort of framing, I'm curious if you could kind of take us into this concept of money karma. Like, what is it and how do we work with it?
I love this question and I love this topic because this is foundational work that I do with all my clients. And I just found again and again that even if we're looking at the numbers, there's so much involved. And it is so important that we know what our number is, what we need to be making each month in order to understand how we create offers and price them and all of that, right? We've got to understand this first. And also it helps us to understand where our mind is at around money when we actually look at our numbers, because a lot of stories come to the surface. So money karma is, so karma, let's back up and just talk karma for a moment. That is a concept in the Indian worldview of action, reaction, essentially, but it's not something that you can look it's over lifetimes. So you got to believe that we've been here before. Maybe you've had some experiences that make you think that. But essentially, there are these ripple effects. And you never really understand fully when something's going to come back around, right? But karma is something you can read in a Vedic astrology chart. A good astrologer can look and start to pull out karmic themes in the chart. So that could be around your work, your relationships, your home, your family, right? There's all these different karmic themes. And so money karma is how money flows in and out of our life, how it's saved, and the kind of success potential there is in a chart, especially if you're an entrepreneur. There's certain ways of looking at that to see how we can be successful on our own or if we should be working for someone else, for example. And so it's a way of like looking at this. And then there are so many tools we can use to heal our money karma, specifically around the practical, like getting to know our numbers, understanding like what every dollar's doing. I like to use an envelope system called YNAB. That's what I teach my folks because it's empowering you. It's not about you helping your bookkeeper do their job or your accountant do their job or you're talking to the government. It's literally you with yourself. Like I'm spending this money on Netflix, not like on like continuing education or whatever you would file that as on your, you know, what, not that anyone should file Netflix as continuing education. But anyway, you know what I mean? Like it gets real with yourself. You can really see where your money's going. And as a result, you can plan. You can start to, you know, create envelopes is what they're called for where you want your money to go. And you can start to save towards things that you're really dreaming to have, right? And so what happens is as you do this process, inevitably, there's going to be stories. I'm not good enough. Oh my gosh, how am I getting by? There's so much more that I need to be making. Oh my gosh, like I'm tired. How am I ever going to come up with this much money? Like there's all these stories, right? And so I teach a process called word spells where we actually look at the words we're telling ourselves and then we work on rewriting those stories in a more productive way that is believable. And we work with those in a particular way. And also I help people using these tools from India, yoga nidra and mantra practice. My teacher teaches a mantra for the goddess Lakshmi that she recites for 108 times, which is a number that's very significant in India. And you can recite that with her. And these are ways to kind of break up the energy. And it allows you to kind of heal in it's like a non-direct way of healing these stories and this, you know, the places we get stuck and actually inviting more to come into our lives, more wealth, more abundance to come in. So it's a practice really of like healing these things at a very deep level.
I love this so much. And I think that there are definitely analogous points in kind of the work I did around money, which wasn't based in, you know, a Vedic or Indian or even astrological methodology, and perhaps was more in like a shadow work and energetic realm. But just the act of witnessing, observing the stories, the narratives that are coming up, and finding whatever way works for you to like interrupt them so that you can like shift to a different narrative. And that is what I'm hearing in sort of the word spell work and the mantra work that you're talking about. And I know you teach a course on money karma, and I know so all of this is being wrapped into that. And I think that it's just so important that we have to do all the stages of that process. We have to like observe, interrupt, and shift or heal so that we can, you know, have a different relationship to money. That's how we change our relationships, is by becoming aware of them and then pausing and then taking a different, hopefully more aligned action around it. Taking it back to the personal place, I'd love to hear again a little bit more about your money journey, which has really transformed over the course of your business. So I'm just curious, like, how has working with money karma supported you personally that then led you to like develop and teach this to hundreds of students over time?
Yeah. So when I returned from India, you know, I'd just been traveling, living on like $12,000 a year, basically, for 4 years. And most of my time was spent in India, like 6 months out of the year. I could live on $2 a day, right? My biggest expense was plane tickets. And so I had felt like I found a way where I didn't have to deal with this reality, like where I didn't really have to think about it that much because I had ended up working for my main friend and teacher, Dr. Robert Svoboda, who's an Ayurvedic physician and a specialist in Indian sciences. And, you know, I was just working 20 hours a week, kind of helping him manage his online presence and advising him about his business. And we ended up building a whole business for him. And so it was actually really scary when I came back because I had expenses and I had bills. And so I ended up with 4 different jobs. And like one of them was cleaning Airbnbs. And I remember just like listening to podcasts of like people that I really admired doing really good work in the world, things that were really inspiring. And I was like cleaning toilets, right?
Yeah.
And this, you know, this was like 2017. And I look back, like we gave away more money last year, $37,000, than I made in 2017 working 4 jobs. And so I went from that to running a $500,000 business in about 3 years time. And it's really due to this work. I was moving my body, doing my word spells. I was looking at my numbers, getting really real with myself. What do I have? What needs to be coming in? If we're going to buy a farm, what does that look like? How much do we need to save? Which, of course, I underestimated because a farm is really expensive. And if you ever want to talk about that, just, you know, hit me up. I feel like I need to have a whole conversation about that because so many of my clients are like, I want a farm. And I'm like, I love you. And I would love to help you not make any of the mistakes I did. So that's kind of a tangent. But, you know, I had to look really at the numbers and get clear and have a hard, cold truth moment with myself and then actually be like, okay, this is what's real. And at the time, my partner was working as a CNA, which is a nursing assistant at a retirement home. And it was very laborious. At the time, he was 59 when I met him. So it's a lot of work for a body that's older. And so I really was like, he wanted to farm and I wanted a farm. And so it was just like, clearly, this is the trajectory. How are we going to make this happen? So it was like having those really frank conversations with myself and noticing all of the horrific stories that emerged out of me having that kind of cold, hard look at reality. The fear, will I ever be able to do this? I dreamed of having, you know, $10,000 months. That's all I wanted. I felt like that would change everything. Right. And it did. It literally did. It calmed my nervous system in a way I've never experienced before. You know, but it took me some time to really get to that space through doing this work. I think it was like 6 months after that I had like a 5K month, which was twice what I had made, right? And then another 6 months, I hit my first 10K month. And then it just never stopped after that. Like after doing this work, I've literally had a 10K month every month since. And that's through proven offers. That's through like really thinking strategically about my business and my offerings and making sure I'm like nurturing people and keeping them in my ecosystem. Like there's other pieces to it, but the money karma work was foundational.
I feel like you have one foot in Vedic astrology and one foot in business strategy. And it helps me, when I approach your work on money karma, feel like I'm not just in the realm of like pure manifestation internet culture where, you know, if I dream it, it will happen for me. I know that work is powerful for some people, but I am like such an earth-ruled person. And I've seen it be really harmful to listeners and clients. It's just sort of like we have to do the spiritual and energetic work and pair it with really powerful business strategies. Like you said, the proven offers, the other things. And it's like the proven offers won't work if you haven't unlocked the money karma piece. But if you are only doing the like very personal private practice stuff, then perhaps also like you still got to sell things to make the money in the business too. And I really appreciate how you bring both together.
Thank you. I feel so seen. Because like that does feel so true for me. And my teachers are that way too. You know, they've taught me a lot about the practical ways that we manage money and we invest and build a business. Like my main teachers, but they are way spiritual and way out there in a lot of ways too. Like if somebody just heard them talking about astrology, they'd be like, whoa, who's this weirdo? And I love that. I love to like ride that line, you know, like be a little queer and like weird and do my thing. Like, but I also really love the grounded nature of like, we're in a body, we live in this reality in this plane, and we're not going to escape it. So how do we deal with it? And how do we like invite it into our practice instead of trying to push away from it?
And that's where I think that starting with the money karma work, the rewriting relationship to money work, can be a really helpful starting point. Because I think that often if we're struggling with money, it can be really tempting to go just get like a business coach and think that all the answers are going to come through like outsourcing your business knowledge. And I just think that often what actually needs to happen first is like figuring out your relationship to money, and then you'll be in a much better place to discern the type of business support that you need and not simply like go follow every 10-step plan to have 10K months that you see out there, which in my experience, like never work anyway.
No, this brings us back to intuition too. It's like really knowing that this is a yes for you or this is not a yes. There are so many ways to get to 10K months. Like literally, there are infinite ways. You just have to do it in your way, but also have to do this work. This work helps you unlock the ability to see, I think. That's how I would put it. Like it kind of calms your nervous system in a way because you're living with reality. You actually know what's going on. And so then you're like, okay, now instead of just deluding ourselves and putting it on our credit card, we're actually like, okay, like I have this set aside for this thing. Like I always use the haircut example. Like if I put away $25 every 6 months, I end up getting this haircut for $100 and I always give her $25 as a tip. And it's really nice that it's just there. And I'm not just like popping it on my credit card. I know the money's there. And then I feel really generous and happy. And I've been able to like interact with my hairstylist, who's amazing, and I get to support her, right? And so there's like all these ripple effects when we actually know what's going on that make our nervous system calm so that we're not just like throwing spaghetti. And then from there, so much generative energy comes, so much creative energy comes, because we do spend a lot of our creative energy in fear, in worry, whether or not we're paying attention to the numbers or not, I find.
Oh, yes. I'm like, you could say that again. If I could have back all the energy that had been leached out of my life from just stressing about money, I could like be a superhuman. I feel like all of that also circles back to what I was sharing earlier about my practice of saying yes to myself. And part of that practice is getting super clear on what I actually desire. Like I really desired the Coke IC, so I got that specifically. I didn't want a Diet Coke. I didn't want a milkshake. Like I wanted this specific thing. And when I was able to give myself that, I could experience the pleasure and like step through that portal into whatever was next for me, even with this simple example. But what's been coming up for me, kind of as you've been sharing about money and talking about your journey and we're talking about business, is so often we are oriented toward the things that we're supposed to want. And we steer our businesses in those directions as well. And I think that it doesn't work. Like, I don't want to farm. Dear God, please, no. Like, absolutely not for me. I like don't really like to be outside that much. Farm is not a life that I'm, you know, not a direction I'm headed. But something that happened for me when I did all the money work and Softer Sounds started working and I had a surplus of money, it opened the space for me to be really clear and ask myself, like, oh, wow, I'm finally resourced. In my 30s, I found myself in a place where I'm finally a little resourced and my nervous system is calm. And now what do I want? And I got a lot of advice that was like, you should immediately be investing this money in retirement funds and like it all needs to go in the market. And I was like, that's just so not what I want to do. And I got other advice that was around like, oh, now is your time to like spend 10K on a business coach, take your business to the next level. And when I really got grounded in what I wanted, it was pretty simple. Like I wanted to buy the house that I live in right now. And I wanted to start planning a trip with my partner. And that's kind of it. And like, it was really these simple things. Like, those are not revelatory desires, but they were my desires. And I got still enough and clear enough and calm enough that I could actually finally see them. And in the past, I would just get so pulled. Like my attention would be so triggered on social media or on television into being like, well, I want the Malibu mansion. I want the private jet. You know, all these like narratives we have around wealth that actually, when it came down to it, I was like, I don't want to live in California. I don't want any of those things. They're just what I've been told to want. And so I think really like all of this work comes together in this like connecting with your intuition, saying yes to yourself, learning what you actually desire, doing the money karma work so that you can calm your nervous system, so you can find that like energetic sovereignty in your business, in relationship to money, and then like articulating your actual dreams and orienting your business and your work toward that.
Yeah. And so you are more authentic, right? And so then you're able to really live the life that you're supposed to live. And I believe that our sincere desires are indications of the karma that we're here to experience. But often those sincere desires, the sincere ones, so the ones that aren't like making us crazy, that aren't, you know, like maybe we're hungry to make them happen, but they're coming from that intuitive place. Those sincere desires are like the positive karmas that we're here to experience. They're leading us towards our dharma or our purpose. They're helping us to understand like what it is that we're here to do, that like hunger, you know? So like when we'll go full circle here, I wanted to write a book, right? I still want to write a book. That hasn't gone away. I haven't done it, but now it's a priority and I'm making space for it and I'm empowering my team to help me do that. And it's like a whole other experience to see this thing starting to come to fruition that I've always wanted, you know, and it coming from that authentic place, it coming from a place of me really knowing what it is I want to talk about and help people, and it's being of service. So it's coming from like that was a sincere desire, but it was masked by a bunch of crap.
100%. That's sort of like, do you want a book or do you just want a book deal? Is it actually that you want to write the book or is it just that you want this sort of like perfect picture of fame and success that comes with this book deal and image you have of yourself as an author? And, you know, I love that that desire has come full circle for you. And now you're like actually tapped into the aligned action to really bring it to life. And so I just think it's fun and powerful to think about the ways that sometimes we do have desires that are so clear across a lifetime. Other times what we think we want and what we actually want seem contrary to each other, and we have to uncover that. So I really appreciate that you've shared your story and your many different paradigm shifts for us. It just feels like we've had such a powerful conversation. I wanted to just wrap up by giving you an opportunity to tell people about the Cosmic Business Salon and how they can be a participant or like learn from you and all of the other speakers, including myself.
Yeah, sure. So the Cosmic Business Salon is a gathering of the minds. It's really a place where we're talking about these different aspects of the cosmic business, values, collaboration, how we center our purpose and just align into the greater space. There's just so many conversations that if you like this conversation that you'll enjoy. It's totally free. So you can sign up at cosmicbusinesssalon.com. And once you go there and you sign up, there will be an opportunity to upgrade, in which case it's $27. And that goes, 100% of that goes to an organization called Saving Wild Tigers. So this give back, last year we were able to give $6,000 and I'm aiming for $10,000 this year. And giving back is obviously a big part of what I do. So this program allows us to bring together these awesome thinkers and really kind of work together to kind of rethink the paradigm and come up with a new way that also helps us to give back too. So that's my invitation to you, is to come and join us and listen in on these awesome conversations.
And I will just co-sign the invitation and share that, you know, I've been approached by quite a few sort of summit salon situations. And this was the first time it really just felt like deeply integrated and aligned. It felt like a cosmic yes for me. So I really want to invite everybody listening to sign up and experience all of the wonderful talks. And then I also wanted to shout out, if anyone listening is feeling really called by the sorts of redistribution and giving and bankrolling the change you want to see in the world aspects of this conversation, that Paula has a giving pledge on your website. Could you kind of tell listeners what that's about and how they can take part? Softer Sounds has signed on, so I invite others to join us.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's called the 2K for Change Pledge, and it basically states that you are going to give back $2,000 US in cash or kind, so it could be in services, this year. And so how you do that is up to you. It could be through scholarships, it could be actual giving, it could be through a fundraiser, whatever it is. But what we're doing this for is if 5,000 people sign this pledge, that means we're giving $10 million back as a community of conscious entrepreneurs. And to me, that's like, I'm doing like the mind blown emoji right now, because that's a lot of money. That's not nothing. And it's 5,000 of us, right? And so I'm also doing research. Like when you sign on, you'll get an email from me, one email. You're not being put on my list, by the way. Like when you sign up for this, you have to sign up separately to be on my list, but you get one email that requests if you would fill out a survey. And that survey actually, I'm finding that a lot of people are giving a lot more money away. So we might get to that $10 million faster. So it's pretty exciting, and I would love for you to be a part of it and join us. And also, if you're like, oh my gosh, I don't even know how I would give that much away, you know, this is something that I teach. Like inside of my programs, I'm really teaching you how to have an aligned offer, how to really niche and understand your ideal client and how to market with ease. So that means like whether or not you're on social media, like how to market in alignment with you. And if you do that, then you should be able to make enough money, and then you can use some of my techniques for creating smaller ticket offerings. I mean, a summit is a lot of work, but there are other ways. Like I have like a low-cost product called the Astrology Guidebook that I put out every year, and that goes 100% to a school in Varanasi, India. So I teach people like how you can do these smaller ticket items and donate those as well. So yeah, thanks for talking about the pledge. That's really exciting.
Yeah, I just think it's such a cool initiative and way of harnessing the work that people, the giving that people are already doing into more of like a community effort, which I think as business owners, often we're just like in our corner doing our thing, and it can be so nice to feel connected through these sorts of things. So, you know, Softer Sounds, I've been redistributing at least 1% of our revenue since I launched the business. And so it felt like an easy yes to be like, great, I'll sign on for the 2K. Maybe that'll be 1% this year. Maybe it'll be more or less, and I'll adjust accordingly. But like, it just felt like a cool way to be more tapped in with other people who are doing this instead of just feeling like I'm doing it and who knows if it's having an impact.
I would just love to say too, like when we're talking about money karma, giving is one of the quickest ways that you can expand what's possible for you and to heal your money karma, because what you're doing is you're signaling the universe that when you give, that you're combining your karma with those who are receiving, and you're making yourself a conduit, right? And so what you give usually comes back in powerful ways, you know, if not exponentially. Like that's been how I've experienced it. Like my business has grown pretty quickly, and I think it has to do with this giving back. It's also just goodwill. Like people love being a part of these things. We all get dopamine hits from giving. So, you know, it's a really great way to engage your audience too.
So much so. And I have not taken your money karma course, so I cannot speak personally to what is inside of it, but I do want to just direct listeners there. If anything that Paula has shared or that we've talked about today is resonating with you, especially all of the money work, if you're one of the people who emailed me and was like, wait, how actually did you do all of that shifting your relationship to money? I do think this could be a really supportive resource for you. So we'll link that in the show notes. Check it out. Learn more. There's a nice little like free training that Paula has that's a precursor into the course. So like definitely go grab that, get to know her work even more, and then discern if she is the right guide for you. Tap into your intuition and let it tell you if this is what you need, and who knows what will follow. So thank you so much, Paula, for joining me.
Such a fan of your podcast. It's really been an honor to be here and just to have this conversation with you. I love having these kinds of conversations. So I'm just grateful that you opened the space and brought me in.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for the invitation to the salon and for joining me here. Thanks to listeners for listening. And until next time, we will see you off the grid and on the interweb.
Thanks for listening to Off the Grid. don't forget to grab your free Leaving Social Media Toolkit at offthegrid.fun/toolkit. This podcast is a Softer Sounds production. Our music is by Melissa Caitlin Carter of Making Audio Magic, and our logo is by Natelier Studio. I'm your host, Amelia Ruby, and until next time, I'll see you off the grid and on the interweb.
Let's go off the grid.
Okay.
Let's go.